Welcome to My Life as a Landlord, where we educate curious U.S. and Canadian landlords, answer rental questions, and clear up confusions about all things housing. If you're looking for some landlord education, interesting guests, and awkward conversations, you've come to the right show. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury. This is My Life as a Landlord. Welcome to it.
Hello there. Thanks for joining me. I am Dr. Jen. I'm so excited for you joining me today at My Life as a Landlord. In business and in life, you never know who you're going to come across. I've run across a 60-year-old first-time newbie landlord who's telling me how nervous they are renting out their house. My guest today is young in years, but wise in lessons. Very seasoned entrepreneur and landlord. Welcome Kyle Johnson to the show.
Hey, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So Kyle was born and raised in Paul River, British Columbia, and I've heard lots and lots from other people about you. They would say something like, oh, you have to have Kyle on your podcast. So here you are.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here and excited to talk and go over some interesting stories and things like that.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about your background. I mean, everybody was telling me that I should talk to you on the podcast. Tell us about you getting into real estate.
Yeah, getting into real estate, I felt like that was the hardest question that I could think of, because I feel like it was something that was always in my back of my mind from a young age. I was always very interested in it, and the light really sparked when I started to, I guess, kind of see that people were buying a house and they were always saying, oh, I made more money off of my house in the last 5 years than I ever did in my wages. And I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would I be working and if people are making money off of real estate instead? And this is from a young age. This is a young teenage 16-year-old version of me. And it's something that's kind of just always been something I've been passionate about.
Very cool. Now, you're in real estate, and I understand you're not just in residential, you do commercial too, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, I branched into residential just before COVID.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah.
My goodness. So what other businesses are you in with your entrepreneurial mind?
By trade, I was a plumber. And so I have a plumbing contracting company that I have that I still do a little bit of stuff with when I actually have spare time. And then 13 months ago, I think it is now, we bought a screen printing company. So we own Blue Steel Printing. You can find us on Google and things like that. And we do screen printing, like garment printing for tons of companies around the West Coast.
Gotcha. Well, I know you're young in years, but listeners of all ages are paying attention to you, Kyle. You've been thinking about entrepreneurial stuff and cash flow since you were a teenager, but lots of people don't think that way. What advice do you have for people doing their first deal?
For first deal, I think that the important thing is to be able to find a property that has a good upside. I think it's very different when you're talking about second deal and third deal and going down that. But for the first one, I feel like you're going to be still working full time. You're still going to have that 9-to-5 income that you have. And so now it's first home. You're looking for a home that has good appreciation to it. That's what I would be recommending trying to find.
What happens what advice would you have for the folks that are going down 2, 3, 4, 5 deals? Lessons learned that you found as you do more deals or commercial deals, you know, different types of deals. What kind of lessons learned have you gone there?
Well, the commercial, that's jumping 2 feet in when you go there. It's it's a whole different world. It's when you make that step from being someone that's just investing into real estate to having a real estate business, because you can't own commercial anything over 4 units. I mean, I think the BC legal limit is actually 5 doors. So, but anything over there, you're now into having to have a corporation and dealing with just a whole different world of it with commercial financing, where everything's different. Environmental, your appraisals, like everyone thinks, oh, appraisals like $300 to $500. Well, a baseline appraisal is $2,500, and you're going to get them done every time you want to pull a dollar out. And like, it's just totally a different world. The fact that your filings every year, because it's actually business. And I think the biggest thing now is when you're doing it is you need, with any business, you need to be positive in cash flow. Because, you know, when you're buying your first house, like you could be losing money and you're working and it's all good. I'm like, oh, I'm going to make some money at the end of this. Well, when you're crossing into a business, well, the business can't float off your back because there wouldn't be enough margins. There's too much loss. So you need to be able to be finding positive cash flow properties or else you'll be a failing business.
Mike and I've done both commercial and residential. And when you're talking about housing, commercial housing, more than five units, it does change the game. It changes the game as far as you're no longer considered a hobby landlord. You're now more of a professional landlord because you've got bigger insurances and more inspections and business licenses. Typically in locations where you have what's considered now an apartment building, even if it's five or six units, you now have to have a business license in whatever local area you are. In Paul River, you have to have a business license. So listeners, wherever you are, if you've got more than a fourplex, you need to check with your local municipality or regional district and check, do you need a license for that building? You might, it does change it. Now, you and I had talked before, Kyle, about some difficulties with environmental issues. That was one of the lessons learned, you said, saying, wow, if I'd have known that environmental stuff was going to be so difficult, I might have changed what I've done. What do you mean by that?
Oh, I don't know if I would necessarily have changed anything I've done, but I definitely got lucky when I went into it. I had no idea that it was such a big deal. Like, it's not just about, oh, do you have an oil tank? There is a phase, like the first step is like a phase one environmental, and it's a massive study. The document is a minimum of like 100 pages. I think my last one, I think it was like 96. And it's a serious study. I didn't even know that there were satellites up in the air taking photographs. Like, I don't remember what year was it. I think it's like 100 years or more. And they have like satellite photos of like your lot and what was there. And there ain't no archives and things like that have records like of that. It's very incredible, like the level of what the banks expect, because they don't want that liability of environmental. Because if you do, it's not just about the effect of your land. It's the fact that if you have an old oil tank and it's leaching into a neighboring property, you're liable. And that means that they're liable because, you know, a bank isn't just someone that's borrowing, they're partnering with you, mm-hmm. whether you like it or not, they become a partner in it.
Right.
So they're not interested in it. And even if you're 50%, even below 50% loan to value, it doesn't matter. They won't touch it because they know the liability of environmental. And it's not just oil. We're talking about this massive list of things that matter, biological waste. It's a very in-depth thing that they do. I was very fortunate with finding properties that were originally kind of during the Hydro Plus generation, where they were doing incentives for places to be all electric. So I was fortunate in that. But, you know, if you were, 5 years beforehand, that you were still running oil. Like, I've seen lots of 60s buildings and they all had to have oil. They had boilers.
Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting. I know that, that anything that's going to be sort of an unknown, typically a lender is going to shy away from, and environmental issues, especially if you get deep into some of these studies, you're right. They're probably not going to move forward with it, but you've got to really evaluate it, which upfront doing your due diligence is going to cost some money. So very interesting.
Yeah, you need to be budgeting a minimum of, I think it's in our local area, it costs about $3,000 to get a phase one. And they're very nice. They at least like do a quick pre-study and tell you whether like, hey, like you're not going to pass a phase one. Like if there's blatant red flags and they know you're going to have to move to a phase two. And it's hard. I have lost, I think I am at four deals or something four deals I've lost over just a quick phone call and them being like, nope, definitely there's oil. And it doesn't matter if it was removed. They're like, oh, we had a so-and-so contractor, like a well-known local contractor, come and remove it. That doesn't count. They need to be, when they take out a tank, it has to have wall scrape, floor scrape, all like they have to be there and they have to do it. You can't just remove it properly and be, oh, it was all good. It looked clean. Like my environmentalist, I sent him a photo, and in the photo, the guy digging it out was smelling it with a shovel, like brought the shovel up. And as I sent him the photos, he started gutting himself laughing. He's like, I've never seen someone do such a thing. That's not how this works. It's not about smelling it. That's not, because they were telling me that they did have an environmentalist sign off on it. And with him sniffing the dirt, it's not. It's way more. We're talking about high-level labs that are doing an insane scope of hydrocarbons and all these other, I wish I could elaborate better, but it's so complicated. When he explains it to me, it's, you got to have those people on your team because it's over my pay grade.
But just what we're talking about, this doing an environmental study and even doing due diligence and spending this kind of money, this is not just like buying a single family home. This is, again, not a hobbyist landlord. This is something where you're deep savvy into, does this property work? What are the problems? I always say, let's flush out the deal breakers as quick as possible. Because if there's a deal breaker on this deal somewhere, the faster you find it, the faster you can say no and move on. Because otherwise you're going to keep spending money and you're going to keep wasting time. And if you find a deal breaker at the end of your due diligence, well, you've just wasted however long your due diligence period was, plus all this money. So yeah, very interesting. Yeah. But let's jump back into tenants. I know you and I had talked quite a bit about tenants, tenants in Paul River, but tenants and beyond, and saying when you're looking at rentals and providing housing, you're looking at both cash flow, so receiving rents, you know, dealing with expenses and things like that, and also communication with the tenant. So cash flow and communication, which is more important in your eyes?
Oh, there was there is, one cannot be without the other, because you can't have, as I was saying before, you can't run a commercial real estate business without cash flow. It's easier to relate this to a coffee shop or something when you're talking about business. What happens to a coffee shop that's negative in cash flow? They close. You can't do it. The money has to come from somewhere. So cash flow is mandatory to be able to have it run. But you will have major problems in running your business if your communication isn't on point. And I've been shaken to my core so many times with
needing to grow in communication, as you need to have such good communication with your tenants. I'm easy at, like, I just think that they know what I expect, but that's not how it works. That's not how you have to do it. You have to
put in layman's terms and explain things and keep up communication. You can't just give them this, like, I'm good at like putting out a pamphlet and like this thing and giving it to them, but that's not good enough. Like, you need to talk with them and you need to be updating and keeping on it.
Yeah. Communication is not my best. I very much admire you. And I think that's something that's gravitated to me listening to you, is because your communication's all on point.
Thank you.
I have awkward conversations. Like, it's like, I'm like, I don't relate to you with that. It's not my natural, but you have to. And there is so many awkward conversations to have with your tenants, whether it's to do with cleanliness, whether it's to do with money. Like, how often do people talk to each other about money? Like,
well, that's your kind of all you are in this relationship. It's a relationship based on the two most important things to people, their housing and their money. And you're it. You're going to have awkward conversations.
That's true. That's true. Well, and I love that you made my t-shirts. Last week we were at a conference, couple conferences. One was for multifamily housing, and the other one is for podcasting. And Mike and I wore our shirts that you made us that say "I Heart Awkward Conversations" on the front. And then, of course, mylifeisalandlord.com on the back. And response was great. Everybody came up to us because, of course, we stick out like sore thumbs. Like, who wears shirts like that to say, I heart awkward conversations? But we do, which is good. So, well, let's keep going here. I wanted to make sure, talking about communication, have you had tenants just say, let me know when you're the owner's available to talk to me, or, you know, make comments that imply that you're not the owner? Cause you are young. You're younger than most landlords.
Yeah, I've had, not in such blatant terms, but okay. I've had the questioning of it. I actually had one person on Facebook say that Kyle's not the owner, and he's the owner's in Calgary. And I was like,
okay,
sure. Like, that's okay. Sure, think that. I think it's more of an issue if you're young in age and you're dealing with tenants, is that there sadly is a lot of the times a respect issue that it's something natural. I think everyone, even older in their ages, can remember a time where they weren't taken seriously in their young ages. And that's something that I now, with working on my communicating skills, I have earned that with all of my tenants. They understand, and they know that I'm not, they respect me. They know not to cross me, and I know my rights, and I'm very respectful. I'm very gracious, but I have their respect now, but there's been an issue before in past tenants.
I know other owners I've seen where, and they're self-managing, right? They don't have a property manager, and they'll be around and they'll just say, I work for the owner. Well, they are the owner, but they don't want the tenants. It's awkward for them to admit that they're the owner. And so there's two strategies. I find that either you let people know that you're the owner, because that alone, you're standing on the property dealing with your tenants, that gives you a bit of power and respect on both sides. Or you don't play the owner, you play like you're acting on behalf of the owner. And either way, you're exactly right. You're dealing with these tenants that have the two main parts of their whole life is their house and their money. I mean, that's a perfect summation of what it is. It's amazing. But speaking of education, Kyle, I know you know your stuff, and you really do. And I love it, because the first conversation we ever had, even before you made the t-shirts for me, you reached out to me to tell me that I made a mistake on one of my podcasts. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, let me find my notes on it. It says, you put in one of your podcasts sometime in 2023 that in British Columbia, if you've got a company owned property, you can't give notice to end tenancy for personal use. Like, you can't take over one of the apartments or one of the units for personal use. And he said, that's wrong. And here's the funny thing. You and I talked, and I said, I'm going to talk to the BC Residential Tenancy Branch, which is the local housing authority in British Columbia. And I'm going to ask them, because that was the truth back in 2015, 2016, going into COVID, was that if you had a company owned building or house, you could not give notice for personal use. It was a company owned house, and the company couldn't actually use it for personal use. But I called the residential tenancy branch, and you were exactly right. I was wrong. And the reason I was wrong is because the legislation changed in 2021, and then it was updated again in 2023 to say that if the company owns let's say the company owns an apartment building, but the company is a family corporation, meaning you've got, let's say, Kyle, you own it with your wife. You own this building with your wife, and you give notice to end tenancy on one of the units because of personal use. In that situation, it's company owned family corporation. That's correct. And it's an immediate family member, right? It's not like a distant uncle or something like that. But if you've got, you know, like a holding company that's not a family corporation, then they cannot give notice for personal use. But I love that you called me out on it. You made me think, and you made me call them. In fact, I had to laugh when I called them and I said, this is what happened. I have this podcast. I explained the whole thing. And the guy went, let me put you on hold for a couple minutes. I said, okay. And so he went, he goes and he comes back and he goes, okay, I found this in 2021, which is what you had sent me, Kyle.
And then he said there was actually another update in 2023 that was just more specific. It was more clarified. And what they did was they actually listed out the immediate family members that you could rent to if you did give notice for personal use. But again, it goes to show you that
even though I know my stuff, it changes all the time. And that's what had happened is that even though I've been a landlord in British Columbia since 2007, it didn't matter that what I thought was true. And I put it on the podcast. You called me out. I appreciate you calling me out. And I try to be right, but I'm not always right. So you were correct in correcting me. Thank you.
I was quite honestly just scared when I heard you say that. I was just like, oh, wait.
Wait,
what?
Because
I had done that. I was like, oh no. Like so I had to do a deep dive into, and that's when I found those notes. I'm like, I think it wasn't even trying to call you out. I was mostly just being like, where did you get that information?
Yeah.
Like, am I missing something? Because you need to have a network of people around you to be able to talk with us about, because it's not that easy to sit there, you know, your phone call with RTB probably took, quite honestly, a good hour and a half. But it's nice when you have relations around you that you can quickly ask and use their resources, because it's always going to be changing. And it sadly is up to some point in discernment too. I think with any law or code, like there is discernment to do with this. That's why there's arbitrators and there's things like this, because they need to, every situation is different.
And it's tough because if you are in a state, province, or territory that has arbitration like British Columbia, and there are many others, then you've got some rulings that have happened before where it would be really helpful if you can look at the past rulings and say, this is my problem. Let's see what arbitrators in the past have said and maybe set a precedent. But there are so many other locations like Alberta, like Hawaii, that like Texas, you don't go to an arbitrator, you go straight to either a justice of the peace or the court. You just go right to court. And it's really interesting. Now, sometimes there's mediation involved, and it wildly depends on your geographic location on what it is. But if you can learn and have these resources, which is why in most of my podcasts, I go learn where your local housing authority operates, learn their numbers. There's usually a local housing nonprofit that can help you. That's good. But let's keep talking about tenants, Kyle. You're so savvy in entrepreneurship and cash flow. It's super refreshing to talk to you. You and I were comparing notes about renting over Christmas. And just for reference, we're recording this in March. I have had a vacant unit since December 1st. And I am doing everything I possibly can. I'm receiving applications, but the quality of the applicants, I was surprised. And you mentioned it too. The quality of the applicants has gone down. I'm seeing this on Facebook going, why is everybody applying and they don't qualify? I don't know. What do you think?
When I had a vacancy for November 15th, and so I had a vacancy all the way through till, that would have been, I think I got it rented out for just February 1st. Yeah, February 1st. Worst vacancy I've had in my entire time of landlording, and I was getting very little qualified tenants. None. I was getting none. I would have rented it. I did have some that came in and I was actually losing them. And I'm like, this is a nice house. And this is one of my freestanding homes. It's a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath. It's at the upper tier of kind of pricing, not like a fancy home. It's a rental home. So still in those twos. And in the end, I was fortunate. I was able, because it was a freestanding home, I was able to find a contractor that was willing to take it, that's working on one of our big new apartment buildings that are here in town. Not my top pick for a tenant. I don't, because as you know, if you pay your contractor, you're going to have him end his contract and he's going to leave. I've worked away for times in my life, and I know that when you are working 10 to 12 hour days and you come home, you're not going to clean up. You're tired and you're with a bunch of other dudes. So it's not that top level I wanted, but I took it because I wasn't getting any light. I was like, okay. And then another month went by and I'm like, I'm still not getting anything. And I picked the short-term tenant because I'm passing the problem to a further date. And I'm pleased to say that since we last spoke, I actually had a tenant give notice.
Okay.
On a different unit, very similar. It's a 2-bedroom, 1-bath house. It's a duplex property. And I've had an increased better. I've had posted for this last week since we last spoke, and I've had some good tenants come through for a freestanding home. So already since then, you know, like it changes fast. But it's really hard when you, as a landlord, don't get to pick when notice is, and you can't hold a tenant responsible for timing. Like that's on your shoulder as a landlord.
That's right. Well, and I know that screening the tenants is absolutely, I'm going to say knowing your local regulations for housing is priority one for any landlord, regardless if you're professional or you've got to know the rules of the game. But priority number two is your screening process. You've got to have a good screening process. And when I'm seeing applications come in for my vacancy that I still have, I have to go, why are these people just throwing their application out? Because they clearly have more pets than are allowed in the unit, or more people allowed than in the unit, or it's a non-smoking unit, no smoking property, and they're smokers, and they declare they're smokers. And it's like, okay, I'm finding the deal breaker off the hop, going, you cannot, like, I'm not going to rent. I'm not even going to consider this because they're smokers. And it's like, it's a very interesting notion. When it comes to applicants who are just sort of pasting their applications everywhere they can, just trying to get something. And I'd rather hold the vacancy than get the wrong person in. And I bet you're going to agree with me. Yeah.
I think a very big thing, and I think me and you are in the same boat with this, other than that, I know you have stuff in Hawaii as well and some other places, but I am a very big advocate for being a big fish in a small town rather than a small fish in a big town. And what I mean in that is that I keep my investments here in the community that I live in and that I know best. It could be somewhere that you're not living, but wherever that you know best, because it is something that's what's given me the leg up on my screening. My screening techniques, I mean, I listen to podcasts every single day, and my screening techniques are down a big level from what I listen to, what a lot of people have to do.
Okay.
I'm not up to the same level, but it's because I have the local connection. I am born and raised in a small town, and I know a lot of people, and I know who those people are friends with. And a big part of my screening, honestly, is still just based on social media. I don't know why people do, but people will post everything. And if they don't post it, their friends posted it.
Right.
And I have enough mutual friends here in Powell River that I seem to be able to do a quick little dive on that. And it's a sad truth. I'm when it comes to this, and when it comes to my house and my asset and my investment, which is my income, that's what my full-time job is. I have other businesses and things, but that's not my main business, is real estate. This is how I make a living. I'm going to be quick to judge, and I'm not going to want to take a risk. If it looks like you're in a crowd that's into partying and drugs and alcohol, that's going to bring drama to me, and I'm not interested. So I've actually had very good results in just being an expert in your area and using your resources. And I make a lot of phone calls, all the property managers. Being a plumber, I'm very fortunate. I've worked for all the property managers from my time when I worked with my father under his plumbing company. Sure. And I know them. I have all their numbers. The one is also a realtor, and he was my realtor when I bought multiple investment properties with him. So I have good connections. I make a quick phone call, and mm-hmm. he's had them because it's a small town. We're like 30,000.
Yeah.
And there's only 3 property managers here in Powell River. And so you can find out the information you need. And if you're connected, yeah, that's basically is really how I've been able to do it and how I've been able to have really great tenants. And I have properties that are in great standing. All my tenants like me. I don't have any drama at my properties. So I'm very thankful for that.
Well, I think you're doing it right, Kyle. Just I know the small town, and when you drive by your properties in the middle of the day and you can tell who's there by the cars, or and you can tell that the properties are calm. You know, we've taken over properties and had inherited tenants, and we go by and the cops are there and there's people screaming over the fences and there's, you know, people dumping laundry over the balcony. I mean, there's been so much drama that we've taken over, and it's like, you want calm, stabilized properties and tenants that communicate. I mean, that's the value in the human side, but it's also the value in the asset and cash flow side as well. So
yeah.
Now, Kyle, one of the freedoms of being an entrepreneur is that you can set up systems that you can try to run remotely as much as possible. I mean, I'm in Hawaii recording this podcast, and you know, I've rentals in British Columbia, and so I run remotely, you know, basically exclusively, regardless of where we are. But do you want to say where you are?
Right now, I am in Puerto Vallarta, in Mexico. Been here for third week now. Yeah, so we're really exercising the big leap on also running not just the real estate companies, which is a lot of work to operate, but also having multiple employees that are working full time right now and dealing with all this online. And it's pleased to say that through the help of a lot of my systems and things that I've had developed over the last year for especially the Blue Steel Printing Company, it's been great. It's been 3 weeks with no hiccups, and I got clear tracking and I know what's going on. And yeah, I'm very excited that it looks like this is something I can do more of, is because there's definitely going to be the beginning years if you're getting into this that you're going to have boots on the ground. Yeah, as you know, when you inherit a new property and you got laundry flying off and you drew the drive-by, I've been in a unit where we woke up and there was police in the rental house to the side of the building. And it was what is going on? And you have to be there. And that's why going back to the owner occupy, we've done that with both of our apartment buildings. We've owner occupied them off the bat because they need to be straightened out. They need an on-site manager and to get things under control and build those relationships with the tenants and deal with the problem tenants as well.
I love it that you and I have finally connected. I'm finally getting you on the podcast. Anything else that we should talk about today? Because I have a feeling we're going to talk again. I'd like to have you back on the show. But what else should we talk about today?
I think that the biggest thing going through our notes from our pre-conversation is just like that communication and actually a bit of a tenant thing. I've been really diving in for learning how to upping my communication to drive them to have better communication to me. As you know, tenants, they have life, they have budgets, they get laid off, there's things that happened and late rent and things like that are part of it. And that's been a big thing for me going into this new economic position that we're in. People are more stretched. It's the fact of the matter. We aren't seeing huge downturns, but we are seeing tight margins. And I've been having to step up my game with just helping my tenants be able to communicate, like, you know, if you're late, I'm fine with that, but I need you to tell me beforehand. Because if I check all my rents, obviously, right on the first to make sure so I can click on my communication. But if I find out that you haven't paid, that doesn't look good to me. But if you would have told me the day beforehand or even the day of that, hey, like, I'm having this hard time, it totally changes the dynamic. And that's a wall that I'm having to break through. And I break through it with one, and I get that one under control. And you don't know once you're, I have a lot of tenants, so I don't know the situation of all these people of where they're at all the time. And so randomly noticing someone else has, turns out laid off or whatever. And it's just like, you, if you communicate with me, I'm going to be able to help you. I'm supposed to be, I'm here to actually help, because I'm not just a landlord that's trying to get you to move out, and I don't care. I care about my units. I care about my tenants, and I want to be able to help.
Awesome. And good for you. And improving your communication. That's something that I think we all strive for, including me. You know, I'm not the best at awkward conversations, but I encourage them, just like what you're doing is you're encouraging awkward conversations with your tenants. And it's uncomfortable, right? It's not fun. It's, you know, sort of confrontational and just sort of weird. And, but the better that you can encourage that for tenants, good for you. That's good. So, well, Kyle, yeah. In every podcast, I always do a call to action for my listeners. And so listeners out there, this is my call to action for you. This is talking about the changes that goes on in your local area every year. Usually at the end of each year or the beginning of each calendar year, there is an
article or a summary of some kind of what has changed in your housing law, housing rule for your state, province, or territory.
Your call to action today is to go back to your local housing authority, whatever it's named, wherever you are, and get last year's changes. So you don't make mistakes. You don't make assumptions that nothing changes, because that's wrong. Everything changes. It's a matter of, can you keep up? So make sure you're aware of whatever changes have happened and that you're correct. Thank you so much again for Kyle joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. Absolutely. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back on. I know there's lots of lessons learned going on, and you know, things are changing in the world of real estate in general. So for all you listeners out there, let me know your comments and questions by emailing me, learn@mylifeasalandlord.com. Comments and questions create the next podcast and real resources. And if you know of a really great guest like Kyle that I should have on the show, please let me know. You can check out all the resources and the guest application at mylifeasalandlord.com. Thanks one more time for Kyle joining me today.
Thanks again.
Awesome. Join me next week for episode 71 as I go through Canada's 2024 rental market report. I'll review it all with you next week. I'll see you there.
Thanks for joining us this week. For all the show notes and resources, check out mylifeasalandlord.com. Want to invest further in your landlord education? We've got a toolbox for you, wherever you are in your journey. Make sure you follow the podcast on the platform you're listening on. Thank you again for joining me, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury, in this episode of My Life as a Landlord. I'll see you next time.